And now on WRS, Michael McKay with the McKay Interview.
Hello, everyone. I have vague childhood recollections of 1956 when tanks of the USSR rolled into Budapest. I was 8 years old. By 1968, I was a student in the English city of Leeds and remember well the same tanks of the same USSR rolling into Prague during that fateful year to overthrow the brief period of liberalisation under Alexander Dubček in Czechoslovakia. How utterly depressing those events were for my generation, born just after the Second World War, and even more depressing for the generation of my parents who had served and who had fought in that terrible war that was supposed to free Europe and the world from tyranny, that set sovereign borders out of the peace of 1945, and that created the United Nations and many of the multinational institutions that we still have today. Like many of you listening who remember those times, we thought, mistakenly, that we'd left those barbaric events behind us in Europe. But last week, Thursday the 24th of February, we were proved wrong. It would appear that sovereignty is not the same for everyone. How did the invasion of a sovereign country by its next-door neighbour come to pass? How are events likely to unfold now? And I'm recording this on Tuesday the 1st of March. What could be the endgame? Can the Kalashnikov, the Glock, and Molotov cocktail ever really solve complex issues? Eventually, warring parties, no matter how aggrieved, have to sit down and come to some kind of political settlement so that the killing stops and peace is restored. And then if blame is to be apportioned, who should cast the first stone? Who should accept responsibility? Can face be saved, or does one side or the other have to be humiliated or even bludgeoned into accepting defeat? These are some of the questions that we shall deal with today, including addressing the question, is there a role for neutral Switzerland? Is there a place for international Geneva in this conflict or end of conflict and resolution? My guest today is perfectly placed to help me and you listening obtain a better understanding of events and circumstances leading up to events in Ukraine today. Ambassador Thomas Greminger is an experienced Swiss diplomat and the relatively new director of the Geneva Center for Security Policy, or GCSP. Moreover, and this is of special relevance to our conversation today, until recently he was the Secretary General of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, the OSCE, in Vienna. We shall hear shortly from him about the significance of his former job and the invaluable insights, experiences, and connections that it gave him for his new job. He's been at GCSP only for the past 10 or so months. Welcome to the McKay Interview, Ambassador Greminger. Thanks for inviting me to your offices here in the Maison de la Paix, very close to the Palais des Nations at the UN Geneva.
Welcome, Michael. It's great to have you here at the Maison de la Paix at the GCSP.
It's good to see you again, Thomas, if I may call you Thomas. As I said, you are relatively new in your job as director, and it was less than a year ago that I interviewed your predecessor. Just to set the scene for our listeners, how would you describe the purpose and the role of GCSP? And in your explanation, please tell me, for the sake of those listening who may not be familiar with the name, how it came to pass that GCSP actually exists.
There are two routes to GCSP's creation. One, I start with the more romantic one, goes back to the Reagan-Gorbachev meeting here in Geneva in 1985. 1985, when Swiss authorities realized that they have hardly any international security policy expertise in the federal administration. So they decided to create a 9-month executive training for international security policy expertise, a course then that quickly turned into a international course and became the core of what is today's GCSP.
Like a training program.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the second reason is perhaps more related to Realpolitik. In 1995, 1 year after the Swiss people accepted a referendum against arming Swiss peacekeeping battalions, president of the Confederation and Minister of Defense, Adolf Ogi, very visionary guy, he realized that Switzerland would never adequately contribute to international peacekeeping. And so in the spirit of global burden sharing, in the spirit of having an adequate Swiss contribution to international peace and security, he decided to create these centers. At first, the Geneva Center for Security Policy, then to be followed by the two other centers, DCAF and the Geneva Center for Humanitarian Development.
Fascinating. Adolf Ogi has been a guest on my show some years ago, but I didn't realize that aspect of it. Now, your previous job was leading the OSCE in Vienna. It is the world's largest security-orientated intergovernmental organization, though many ordinary people might not be familiar with its name, nor with the abbreviation. That role must have given you special insights into what appears to be unraveling before our eyes in Ukraine at the moment. How would you describe the current events, and can GCSP play a role even when parties are engaged in violence and conflict? And what would that role for GCSP be? Could you give me some examples, please?
Well, let me perhaps start with the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, which indeed offers the most inclusive platform for dialogue in the Euro-Atlantic and Eurasian area. It also has a fantastic toolbox to prevent, to manage and resolve conflict. Provided that states are willing to use these tools and to use the platform for dialogue. Now, obviously, in 2014, in managing a crisis in around Ukraine, back then there was a commitment, a political will by key states to use the OSCE as an actor to facilitate de-escalation measures. Now, in the current crisis, that has now turned into a terrible war, this hasn't been the case and remains to be seen if, you know, key stakeholders would change their attitude. But basically, the point I'm trying to make is, you know, multilateral platforms are always as useful as member states want them to be. And so what can the Geneva Center for Security Policy do in such a situation? Well, one of our five products that we offer is indeed facilitating diplomatic dialogue. And we offer expert discussions, expert dialogues on geopolitical issues, on regional issues in support of peace processes, for instance, but also in support of negotiations on relevant issues of global governance. So in that broader setting, we have been also preparing dialogues, for instance, in support of the strategic stability dialogue. We have been preparing a track 1.5 dialogue on cooperative security with a view to look into the principles of European security to help states, in particular OSCE participating states, to better prepare for 2025, the 50th anniversary of the Helsinki Final Accord. Now, due to the current war, this, of course, is all put on hold. For the time being, there is no appetite for dialogue at all. We'll have to see how this evolves over time. And I do hope that there will again be a commitment to talk and to dialogue. And I think we at a think tank like the GCSP, we can start preparing as early as possible, you know, for the moment when governments, international organizations, track one actors in general, are again ready to talk to each other.
I see, I understand that. Thomas, I read that you're a student of history, as well as being a high-ranking officer in the Swiss Armed Forces. You're probably therefore aware of the very telling words of George Kennan, the American diplomat and historian. He was U.S. ambassador to the USSR under President Truman and to Yugoslavia under President John Kennedy. He once said, "The jealous and intolerant eye of the Kremlin can distinguish, in the end, only vassals and enemies. And the neighbors of Russia, if they do not wish to be one, must reconcile themselves to being the other." I ask you to look through one end of your analytical telescope and then the other, and then give me a view of what has passed between Russia and some of its neighbors, like Ukraine and like Georgia, for example, over the past 15, 20 years. What do you see? And how would you describe or analyze recent history in that part of the world? And would you agree with George Kennan?
Let me at the outset clearly state that, you know, nothing justifies what we are currently seeing. So this war against a sovereign state, against Ukraine, cannot be justified by anything that has happened that perhaps went wrongly over the last 30 years. Having said this, indeed, the Russian Federation always felt like treated as the loser of the Cold War, right? And this initially in the 90s did not lead to any serious consequences because the Russian Federation was relatively weak. But once the country recovered, these complaints became more and more explicit, clear. And I think, indeed, the West was not really listening and did not really take these security concerns seriously. Security concerns that are in particular related to all these states that currently geographically are in between NATO and the Russian Federation. So basically mm-hmm. Ukraine, Georgia, Armenia, Azerbaijan, Moldova, and Belarus,
yeah.
Right?
And Belarus, yeah.
And so there is, I think, also from a historical perspective, a legitimate concern by the Russian Federation that in these states in between, you know, you would not have any, let's say, weapon systems stationed, troops stationed, that you consider to be hostile to you. And I think that's one perspective. The other perspective is obviously that at the end of the Cold War, we all expected the Russian Federation to turn into a liberal democracy, respecting human rights, rule of law, building up strong democratic institutions, a vibrant liberal economy. This did not happen.
And can I ask you, just to interrupt you there, I mean, you're much closer to these things than I am or was at that time. Was that really the pervasive view that the Russian Federation would change its posture, would change its focus, would change its the way it looked at some of these issues and be more like the West? That was the general view, was it?
It was definitely in the 90s.
Yeah. Okay.
But then, obviously, later on, one realized that this is not going to happen. And then I think instead of continuing to talk with the Russian Federation about its security concerns while acknowledging that divergences regarding the political system will remain. I think we started to more and more refraining from talking to them. And this became particularly, of course, relevant in the last decade, and in particular after the illegal annexation of Crimea. There was this policy, no business as usual, which basically meant that one stopped talking to the Russian Federation. And I think that, even though understandable in a way, this was not a wise policy, as we can see today.
So with the benefit of hindsight, the West could have played things a little bit differently, although it's always easy, as the Americans say, to be the Monday morning quarterback.
It's true.
Ambassadors don't have that.
Absolutely. And you know, I would very much stick to what NATO laid out in the 60s as its Harmel doctrine, that argues, you know, you need a security policy that builds on two pillars, that stands on two pillars, a deterrence pillar, but also a détente, a dialogue pillar. And I think, frankly, the dialogue, the détente pillar, was neglected, in my view, over in recent years.
Okay. My guest today is Ambassador Thomas Greminger, Director of the Geneva Center for Security Policy, GCSP. Thomas, especially in view of yesterday's decision by the Federal Council that Switzerland will adopt all the EU sanctions against Russia, please tell me how Switzerland's neutral position is valued by big powers and smaller and weaker powers around the world, in your experience. Unless you particularly want to name names, you can speak generally if you prefer. How does Switzerland's value differ from other non-aligned countries, neutral countries? And as a corollary to my question, how close, in your experience, can Switzerland sail to the wind on complex and intricate geopolitical issues before it feels or is perceived by others that it runs the danger of compromising its neutrality? Now, obviously, I have yesterday's decision very much in mind, but give me some insights, please, into the process, I mean the thinking, that goes on inside the federal government when weighing the pros and cons of protecting Switzerland's good name, good offices, and international reputation. This is a long question, I'm sorry.
No problem, but let me be very candid and let me bring it down to a dilemma between two major objectives. And a dilemma that is difficult to resolve and depends, of course, on the specificities of a particular situation. On the one hand, neutrality offers this possibility to offer protected spaces for people, also for non-like-minded people, to meet, to come together, and to exchange, and perhaps also to, you know, identify common interests and eventually to cooperate. And that is also very much the essence of the Geneva Center for Security Policy. That's the essence of International Geneva. Now, if you want to maintain these and protect these safe spaces, obviously you want to remain in dialogue with all relevant stakeholders of global politics. On the other hand, a country like Switzerland, a relatively small country, its best friend in international relations is international law. And I think there are moments where just you need to show solidarity with the friends of international law. And I think the severity of what has happened since the 21st of February is such that the Swiss government had little other choice than to adopt these sanctions in its entirety. Because I think you know, you need to be seen as a staunch supporter of international law in such a situation. I'm saying so even though I'm, of course, aware that this will render my job here to gather people at the GCSP more difficult, more challenging. Travel will be more difficult. Perhaps also perceptions, you know, will become more difficult. But I think there was little choice then to decide as the Federal Council decided yesterday.
Thank you. That's a very clear explanation, Thomas. Last question. I never like to finish my interviews on a negative, but I have one more quotation for you from George Kennan, and I guess you probably know it already. He said, "We should cease to talk about vague and unreal objectives such as human rights, the raising of the living standards, and democratization. The day is not far off when we are going to have to deal in straight power concepts. The less we are then hampered by idealistic slogans, the better." In the light, Thomas, of what is happening today as we speak in Ukraine and what it might have unleashed as other political and military powers look on, do you think that George Kennan was right?
Let me respond in a differentiated way. You know, I have worked with the comprehensive approach to security of the OSCE, an approach that has been developed basically since the Helsinki Decalogue in 1975, when for the first time human rights became to be perceived as an important component of security. And I would very much maintain this comprehensive approach to security. But then I think once you want to tackle specific challenges and issues, you need to be pragmatic. And if you have hard security challenges, if you have political, military issues at stake, well, you need to address them without, you know, bringing in lots of ideology in the margins. And I think that has been perhaps also, you know, a downside of OSCE's work over the last decade. The political military dimension has been neglected. The West has focused almost exclusively on the human dimension, to an extent on the second economic and environmental dimension. But the political military dimension has been clearly neglected. And so we have outdated confidence and security building measures. We have not advanced in implementing military risk reduction measures. We have an arms control architecture that has fallen apart. And we haven't been able to come up with anything that would replace it. And I think that clearly calls for a renewed priority on political military challenges. I think we can't take them for granted as we had hoped after the end of the Cold War. But this does not mean that we should abandon the concept of comprehensive security.
Thank you, Thomas, for answering all my questions so fully and so candidly. My guest today has been Ambassador Thomas Greminger, Director of the Geneva Center for Security Policy. Thanks once again, Ambassador.
You're most welcome. Thank you, Michael.
That was the McKay Interview with Michael McKay. And don't forget, you can hear that interview again on our website, worldradio.ch.